Welcome to the Modern Yogi Podcast. An exploration of ancient wisdom.
Hello, hello, everyone.
We're on episode number.
Do you want to say welcome?
Oh, welcome.
Don't we usually say like hi or something?
Hello. Are you happy?
No, I'm joking.
Hi, welcome to the podcast, everybody.
What's your name?
We're on episode. No, I usually do my name after.
I'm sorry, I think I forgot.
The cameras are in front and we just launched our YouTube channel. So we're like very aware that we're being video.
I didn't even think about that. I think I just forgot how to do a podcast in general.
I'm so frazzled. I was just like, hello, welcome, everybody. My name's Tama. Okay, we're on episode number
103.
Thank you so much for joining us. We are so excited to have you. We recently put a poll out on what country do you listen to this podcast from?
Yeah.
And we got so many different countries.
It was so cool.
It was wild.
From all over the world. Place.
Zimbabwe.
Yeah, where
Taiwan,
else?
New Zealand, Australia, Singapore, Portugal, Cyprus, India.
So cool.
Yeah, it's amazing. Thank you so much for listening. What happened on our 100th episode?
Oh, right. Oh, on our 100th episode, a big like surprise release happened. We launched our YouTube channel. So many people from all around the world had been asking, when am I finally going to be able to watch the video along with the audio? So we were like, this is a big deal. So yeah. We were going to do it for the 100th episode.
I love it. And if you have made it to 100 episodes and you love our podcast, feel free to donate to our GoFundMe. And if you donate $108, we'll give you a free hat or beanie.
We are wearing them right now.
Yeah. Hi-oh.
Woo-hoo. Also, just to clarify for the YouTube, we started at episode, what is it?
48.
And that's because that's when Ella joined us and started doing the video recording. Mm-hmm. Before then, we did not have our ish together.
Yes, we did not have that ish together.
And so thank you so much, Ella, for putting together our YouTube.
Yes.
So that marks pre-Ella, post-Ella.
Yes.
Yeah. And
that's how it's a world of a difference.
Yeah. P-E-N. P-E.
That was so good.
Before Christ, after Christ. Pre-Ella, post-Ella is the same thing. We need to change those acronyms.
We're off to a really good start.
This is a great start to our YouTube channel.
Anywho.
It's also cool to note that this is our 103rd episode and we're starting chapter 13. So three is in the air.
Yeah. Very nice.
I like it a lot.
And we finished chapter 12 last episode.
Devotional service.
Shama Sangeeta, do you want to give us a
summary? My God. I love doing recaps because I pay so much attention. Thank you so much. So basically Krishna is like, hey, meditate upon me. Wait, Shama, you put me on the spot. No.
I'm sorry. You gather your thoughts, but I was just going to say chapter 12 is called devotional service. So we've talked before that the Gita can be broken down into three sections of six chapters. So you have the first six, the middle six, and the last six. So this is an exciting day because as we start chapter 13, we are tackling the final set of six chapters that we're going to dive into. And actually, there's a beautiful way to conceptualize the breakdown of the Gita. Kishore Swami says that the three sections of the Gita teaches you how to live, how to love, and the final section, how to let go. So how to live in this world, the first six sections, we talked a lot of the technical things. What is the soul? What is the body? We just start laying the foundations. How do we live in this material world? What is what? You know, we start breaking it down. The middle six chapters, how to love, that's all about, chapter 12 was called devotional service. It has so much to do with our love, our devotion for Krishna, for the Supreme Lord. Of course, these are big brushstrokes. There's many details we talked about. And the final six chapters, how to let go, as we dive into it, that'll come more and more to life. But already, chapter 13 is called Nature, the Enjoyer, and Consciousness. And we start breaking things down. It becomes very technical. How do we let go and detach from this world and prepare ourselves for the next realm?
Ooh, first six, how to live. Next six, how to love. Last six, how to let go. Wow, yeah, that's
really
beautiful.
Powerful, actually.
Yeah. And so just a quick summary of chapter 12. It's like Krishna was really talking about all of the things that he cares about, like what is really dear to him. So devotees who are he went on a whole list of things. He's like, people who are equal to friends and enemies, people who are equipoised in honor and dishonor, free from envy. And he gave this entire list over the a whole bunch of different verses, and he always ended with, these are the qualities that are very dear to me. Mm. So like cultivating those qualities, how to love is very important.
Yeah. And remember that we both like mind blown when I pointed this out, and I had just discovered it. Maybe Priya already knew this, but starting from text 13 all the way to the last one, text 20, it always ended with, and this person is very dear to me. This person, very dear to me, very dear to me. So it's all about love. And we've said before, the whole Gita is essentially a love book. It's how to achieve the ultimate big love.
Yeah. I mean, I love the fact that you express the first six, second set of six, and then the last six too, because it's everyone's life, right? First, we got to figure out, what am I doing? Like, what is my place? What are my routines? What am I trying to achieve? Like, who am I? What am I doing? Like, just how to live, right?
Yeah.
And then the next step we take is like, okay, now maybe, you know, what else is beyond just how to do my everyday life? Yeah, right. And a lot of people are looking for a relationship or friendships or community. Like, that's all love. And ultimately, we're just looking for Krishna, which is the supreme love. Right. And then after we understand, okay, how to live my everyday life, how to love my community, Krishna, and all these things, then it's like, well, how do I let go of the things I'm attached of? Yeah. Right? So it's like, it's all really very much makes sense to our lives and our trajectory. Yeah. So it's great. Thank you for bringing that today.
Yeah. And great summary. Yeah. Absolutely.
Cool. All right. The invocation, please, ladies.
Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha.
Translation. I was born in the darkest ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torch of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances unto them.
Beautiful.
All right.
Today, it's Sunday, and we were, Shamali and I are in a harmonium class, and that verse was read at the very beginning of class. And it was like, I offer my obeisances unto him. And in my mind, I was like, no, it's them. Because I'm so used to that you say them. And I was like, wait, actually, it's written as him. But okay.
We're so woke here. I love it.
We're a little too woke at times. No, I'm just kidding. It's the perfect amount.
All right.
Priyadarshini, you want to take it away?
Yes. Text 1 and 2. Arjuna said, oh, my dear Krishna, I wish to know about Prakriti, nature, Purusha, the enjoyer, and the field and the knower of the field, and of knowledge and the object of knowledge. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, this body, O son of Kunti, is called the field, and one who knows this body is called the knower of the field.
Okay, so I'm going to have you repeat that, but just so everybody knows, the title of chapter 13 is called Nature, the Enjoyer, and the Consciousness. And literally, they're going straight into it. They're going right into it. Yeah. This is like a 1-2 verse, 1-2 verse. And so it's interesting that Arjuna is asking a question and then Krishna's answering
directly.
Yeah. But I have no idea what you just read because that was a lot. So like, let's repeat that.
Yeah. I mean, I think even to explain what this text is, we have to go through the purport because it is like kind of one thing after the other kind of, you know, but I will read it one more time and then we can go from there. Yeah.
Perfect.
Arjuna said, oh, my dear Krishna, I wish to know about Prakriti, nature, Purusha, the enjoyer, and the field and the knower of the field, and of knowledge and the object of knowledge. Do you want to stop there?
I think Arjuna is asking a really run-on question, and there's a lot of things. So let's
break that down.
Let's figure out what Arjuna is asking.
Also, before we even, I was saying we were talking before we started recording the episode, and I was like, how is Arjuna asking? Why is he asking about something? Like, how is he asking about something he doesn't know? Right? It's like, tell me about cows. But if you've never seen a cow, how would you know there's a cow?
Maybe he's like heard of the general concept of these things, but like he's never really understood the answer.
Right? Could be. Yeah. Part of me thought this hints towards Arjuna. We've talked about this before, that Arjuna is asking for our benefit because he's an elevated soul.
Right.
He knows this stuff. But so when you asked that question before, I thought, well, that must be because like, yeah, he knows this stuff. So he's kind of asking for our sake.
It might be for our sake, or it might really be like he understands in a general sense. Again, his job, he's not a philosopher. He's a warrior.
Right.
Like he understands dharma, like responsibility, duty, like all of these different aspects. And religion was meant to be taught to everyone so they understood the basic concepts of life. So it's like you can understand the basic concepts of life, but the moment you take it seriously and you really inquire to really understand. And so it could be a combination of both, you know.
Okay, I do want to add, maybe you also read Krishna's, because then in the purport, we're going to go through
break
all
it down.
Of it.
Okay. Yeah. So this now?
Yeah.
Okay. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "This body, O son of Kunti, is called the field. And one who knows this body is called the knower of the field."
That adds a lot of clarity. Right? When I read the beginning one before we started recording, I was like, so what is this field we are talking about?
Yeah, I think we should, this is my opinion because it took me a second to really understand this. I think we should read through the purport, whatever highlights, and then go back to the text and read it one
love
more time.
It. So let's
for
do
full,
it.
Like
love
full
it.
Clarification. Okay.
Okay.
So we start off with Krishna saying that this body is called a field and that one who knows the body is called the knower of the field. And I feel like in my mind, I was thinking, why are we putting other words to it when we already have words for this, right?
Say body, call it what it is.
It is what it is, right? Because we're saying the body is a field. Well, it's just the body. And then the knower of the field is the soul. We're talking about the body and the soul at the end of the day. That's kind of the gist,
so
right?
So we're just... This is overcomplication for no reason. Well, he's literally talking about the body and soul.
I think there is a reason.
There's always a reason. Yeah, you're right.
So I think the reason is it says it's trying to explain how we come to be souls in this body.
Right.
Okay.
And the purport starts us off with basically, okay, what are our working materials? Arjuna's asking about prakriti, which is nature, purusha, the enjoyer, setra. How you pronounce
Kshetra?
Kshetra.
Like right? Kurukshetra. Exactly. Yeah. The field. And what's the next one? It's knower. You would pronounce it?
Kshetra.
I didn't want to be the one.
Yeah. I don't know.
Okay. Kshetra and then J.
Okay. If you're a Sanskrit major, please send us a voice note with how to pronounce it. It's the J and A. A J N A, but the N has a little squiggly on top
and
of it.
In Spanish, we call that ñ.
It's a Jota ñá.
If you're
a Sanskrit scholar that speaks Spanish, there you go.
Let us know. Clarify. So the field, it's knower, and then the last step, knowledge, and the object of knowledge. So that's all of kind of like the working elements we're about to break down. Mm-hmm. So basically, he's inquiring about this, and Prabhupada starts explaining, all right, we know that this body is the field of activity for the conditioned soul. And why...
Wait, before you go into any further, this body is the field of activity for the conditioned soul. Meaning, within this body, we enact karma.
Yep.
Right? That's why it's called a field of activity. Mm. And therefore why we're using word field. So it's actually all connected.
Repeat that last line. That was actually really good how you said it. This body is a field of activity where we enact all of our karma.
Right.
That's why it's a field where a kind of like the platform, the canvas.
The space. It's almost
the
like
a soccer field.
Yeah. It's like a soccer field, right? Like all of the activities are happening there, right? And then it goes to clarify further. So let's
and
keep going.
We can think of it because we've said before, like Kurukshetra, it's like a battlefield. So if we think of this life, like the warfare between good and bad, light and dark energies, we are trying to fight material existence on this field of activity, our body.
Sure.
We all have a field.
So basically, Prabhupada says, this conditioned soul, our soul is trapped in this material existence, and we are attempting to kind of like lord over material nature. We've talked about that. We want to see ourselves as the enjoyers. This existence is for me, myself, and I to enjoy.
Yeah, we want to control material nature, right? We want to say like... everything that's in this planet is for me to enjoy it. Like I want to control what I do, what I achieve, what I get, how people treat me. Like, and we realize we honestly can't control much other than our own actions, thoughts, and what else? Thoughts, actions, and words.
Yeah.
That's what I was trying to say.
Yeah.
And I think it's like, we're set up for failure, right? Because there's so much of our life that's established to be like, how do we be happy? What is the pursuit of happiness? Right. And it's like, oh, happiness means enjoyment. Okay. How can I enjoy the most?
Yeah.
And therefore I will be happy the most.
Exactly.
That's the instinct most people have.
Society is set up.
But it's because we want to enjoy, and it actually goes further. Should we keep going or you want to make a point, Shamali?
No. Keep going. The next line talks about, I think it's very interesting. Why do we get the certain field of activity that we get, or the body?
Mm-hmm. We talked about this a long, long time ago when we were talking about the soul and the body. Mm-hmm. And so Prabhupada says, according to our capacity to dominate material nature, one gets a field of activity.
What would that mean?
Well, let's read the next one and then we'll connect it. So the field of activity is the body. What is the body? The body is made of senses. Mm. The conditioned soul wants to enjoy the senses. And according to this capacity to enjoy the senses, he is offered a body. Mm. So we want to enjoy and we already have a premeditated desire. Like everyone that is born already has a desire. Oh, I want to be wealthy. Oh, I want to be famous. Oh, I want to be a parent. Oh, I want to be a carpenter, whatever.
But that's not a random desire. That is a desire from our previous lifetime.
Yes, it's like accumulated. The original desire, I think, was to just sort of be the ultimate supreme controller of everything. We were kind of jealous of Krishna, I guess. Mm-hmm. That's how we could say it.
That was the original.
And then in that frame of thought, we got kind of caught up in like, well, no, actually in this life, I wish I could be this, right? Like, isn't there, I mean, I think everyone's had that moment of like, I wish I could be born wealthy because then my life would be easier. And that's an unconscious desire that gets built over. And depending on how much that is an emphasis on our lives, the next life, you might potentially achieve, also depending on Pi's activity. Karma is very complicated, not something we can mathematically predict or figure out fully, but
but it's so true. Even when you look, pretend none of this, we're not even reading any of this. Look out into the population. You can feel energies from different people. Some people feel more like, you know, we've talked about there's mode of goodness, passion, and ignorance. And some people feel more lustful, that they want to enjoy. They have more of a propensity to enjoy. They have a more, maybe a mind that pulls them more in that direction. So they're going to, if that's kind of their desires, and you brought up Shama, the ending, whatever our consciousness is in our previous life at the time of death, that determines in a way our next destination. Well, I mean, not in a way, it does.
So for instance, like we often look at like the world and like people who are born into such affluent families, right? Mm-hmm. And then there's people who are born into like poverty. Like what, that's so, if you just look at it and see those two different polar opposites, you'd be like, oh my God, this world is so unfair. Right. But this purport is literally talking about like based off of your desires, based off your karma, all of those things, that actually decides your next birth for you.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I also, like when you say that example, it makes me think about like, yes, there's also really wealthy people who are so miserable. And then there's really poor people who are so happy.
So happy.
Yeah. Right? Right. They are born in a family that's very loving and there's a whole different situation. So I think the way I'd like to think about this idea also of like the field that we get is also in terms of race. And maybe this is, you tell me.
Oh, I 100% agree like that the field that we get, like race is included in that. Socioeconomic status, the family that you're in, the race that you're born into. Yes.
It is like, so precise.
Like, I mean, you can tell like how much like Hispanics, no matter what part of the world you're from, you have a similar nature. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter where you were born or the family dynamics are the same, or Indians have a similar dynamic, similar. And so I think it's like, maybe Hispanics are a little more of passion. Maybe this, you know, like right, it's like we have obviously a little bit more like balances of the three, right? I think of it as percentages. Like, for example, you could say like I'm making up numbers now, but I have like 30% mode of passion, 40% mode of ignorance, and, you know, 30% mode of goodness whatever, right?
So
Indians are like more mode of, you know, diabetes and like, you know, like we're more prone to things.
That she can say that because she's Indian, but in general, a lot of Indians are very mode of goodness, very dharmic. They're very duty bound. So, I mean, these are obviously generalizations.
It's very specific to the particular soul, their desires and their karma, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So there's exceptions to everything. It's not that if you are Hispanic or Indian or white, you're going to be in this box.
No.
But there are some overarching trends that could play in. So everything is just, the point is it's so precise, right? Yep. Where you're born, socioeconomic background, what family, what timing, what place, it's all so detailed.
And it's for a purpose. It's because you have the particular desires you want to have, right? So let's say that maybe in a previous life, you didn't have much of a close family. You might be born into a Hispanic family that's very loving. Mm-hmm. Or maybe in your previous life, you had so much money and it was like, it didn't seem like it satisfied any of your needs and you wanted other needs met, and you might be born into a different situation. So it's like, it's really the field you were given is according to your desires. And that's, and a mixture of like how you want to use your senses at the end of the day.
Your karma,
That's a good ending point. How it's about how you want to use your senses in this life, because no matter what our birth, where we're from, everyone has an opportunity to grow and to evolve. And you can be born in the most wealthy family or the most poor family, and both ends of the spectrum can still take steps towards Krishna consciousness if they try to elevate their consciousness. Because that's what the mantra does. That's what this process does. It elevates your consciousness from whatever baseline you're at, and you can tap more into higher modes of consciousness.
I mean, it might be a little bit harder, depending on your karma.
You
might not get to that place of like having the opportunities to be more Krishna conscious, right? You're in like survival mode, right? So like we're very lucky to have access to this knowledge.
Oh, totally. Right? Yeah,
because even having access to this knowledge is karma as well.
Right.
I think I like to think about, one, I was going to say like, yes, I think this is sort of like the foundation for who you can be. And then it's completely up to you because we have free will to choose to find Krishna in this lifetime, even if your conditions are not perfect. I think about like, for example, the devotees who are doing Harinam in New York, and they do it kind of like by, I don't remember what street it's on, but it's near a subway station. Mm-hmm. So tons of people walk past them and tons of people hear the holy name. Mm-hmm. And like, maybe that time they heard Hare Krishna, and then some other time they met someone named Krishna, and then they're like, huh, Krishna, Krishna. And then they find a book.
Yeah.
And like, that's how slowly it starts connecting. And sometimes it's like, sometimes it's really meant for you to be found. Maybe you already had a desire to find Krishna in a previous life.
Absolutely.
Even if everything else in your life seems kind of completely the opposite. I feel like
totally.
There's, I don't know, even, I don't know if this, anyways, I don't know if I want to bring this up, but even just kind of the last couple of days where we had kirtan nights every night, like some people that were there have maybe never heard kirtan before.
Totally.
And like that just happened based on the fact that their family members were Indian and culturally they were invited. Mm-hmm. And so like, I think that's where it's like Krishna, you know,
intervenes.
I don't know.
Yeah. But no. I think there's also like, there is a fortune to this, right? Like say you're born in a communist country where you don't have access to any sort of spirituality, or it's like banned by the law, right? I think even access to it is like very fortunate karma.
Yeah, for sure.
Totally.
For sure. Mercy. At the end of the day.
Well, to merge what you're both saying, because Priya, what stuck that you said with me is how even when everything seems against you, if you get that mercy, you can still make progress. And you brought up countries where it's banned, Shama. And already this example popped into my mind where, have you guys heard of the book? I think it's Salted Bread. I'm going to look, double check. But it's about the Russian devotees in the time when it was totally banned and they were sent to jail for wanting to pursue Krishna consciousness. And that did not deter them. In fact, you know, they would get these little they were like tortured. They'd get measly portions of dry bread. And what they did, they had such a desire that they would soak the bread in water to make beads and salted bread, because they would, out of the little meal they got, they would make japa beads so they could be able to chant.
Wow.
So Shama, when you were saying that, I agree, it might be more difficult for some people. It's called
salted bread,
a true story. This is my dad has read it before, and he cries every time he reads it because this is the level of dedication and desire these devotees had. So when you said, Shama, it's true. It could be more difficult depending on what setting you're born in, but that's doesn't stop it from happening. You know, if you have a desire, my gosh, these people, and many of them died in the jails because they were so mistreated, but they died chanting on this little salted bread beads that they made.
Yeah.
I'm going to just point it at the camera and keep talking so that it knows to focus on this. But look at that cover, because they literally made a japa mala out of bread.
Amazing. Yeah.
That's so wild.
I mean, I think even, I know we're not super special cases, but I think even the fact that we're both Hispanic, Shamali and I, and like we are in this Krishna conscious movement, it doesn't speak to us, but it speaks to how Krishna will find a way to find you, kind of thing. And like how Prabhupada really spread the movement everywhere so that
worldwide,
many people could have the opportunity. But again, yes, there's a lot of factors involved in, you know, coming closer to Krishna. But this kind of explains just generally how the body is made, which is in percentages of the senses based on what desires and how they want to use the senses. That's how we are offered a body, so that we have the capacity to enjoy sense gratification according to what we desire.
Right. And we've said this before, no matter what nature you get, if you're more mode of passion, more intellectual, maybe mode of goodness, whatever your nature is, you can apply it to Krishna's service. I mean, Brahma, the creator, has to tap into the mode of passion to create the whole existence. So any mode can be used in service.
Yeah. And I think we all are a bit of all three of those, right? To different degrees. And so depends on the day, right?
Actually, I feel like it's when we're born, we're given a certain percentage. And then throughout life, we can kind of shift the percentages based on like knowledge and stuff. That's how I like imagine
that,
actually.
I like that.
Yeah. How much do you really try and chant your japa in a meditative mood? That can totally calm one down. And yeah.
And you've seen people change over time, right?
Absolutely.
Like they're maybe very passionate and eventually they get calm and they're peaceful.
Yeah.
I like that because it's up to us and those percentages change, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, Shama, you love astrology. No surprise there. We've
brought So Vedic astrology.
And Prabhupada talked about for a devotee, whenever they clap their hands in kirtan, it changes the markings on their hand or maybe like it just changes the destiny that they have, their further astrology.
Yeah, I love that.
I also had actually someone asked me about that quote and they're like, where is it? Can you find it? And I was like, I will look into it. But I also talked to an astrologer not so long ago and he was saying that for him, it was harder to do devotees' astrologies, like astrological charts, because anything can really change. Right. Like it's harder to, but for a non-devotee, it was easy because everything was almost like, yeah, this is probably most likely what you're going to get.
Wait. Can we just emphasize this point, this beautiful point that you just made?
We just talked about devotional service, the soul astrology. Whoa there.
Wait, now I'm finally paying attention to this episode. Okay. You just said, and then was this a devotee astrologer?
It was, yes.
Wow. Okay. So just to clarify, your devotee astrologer said that it's harder to do a devotee's chart because it has a higher propensity to change.
Yes.
Because why?
Well, I mean, because we're devotees. It depends on like how much faith that we have in Krishna, not just faith, but really like how much effort we put into understanding how this world works and like Krishna consciousness in general.
And would it be possible?
She gets the highlighter out.
She's so excited.
I'm so excited right now. Would it be possible that our charts can change because Krishna has more of an incentive to make changes for us?
I think there's definitely tons of mercy. I mean, Krishna says it, like if you make a few steps towards him, he'll make so many more towards you, right? Like when Krishna feels your love, he wants to reciprocate. So it's like sometimes our karma is heavy. Like sometimes we might have done something in our previous life or this or that. And Krishna's like, well, let's, you know, oh my gosh, should I tell that story?
Which one?
The one I'm going to tell right now.
Okay. One of our friends was telling us this the other day. We were talking, oh man, this is kind of a long thing.
Which story is it?
I just don't want to say names just in case.
Yeah. Just say person A.
Person A's father. Okay, I'll just tell the story.
Tell the story.
Okay, so anyways, we were talking about death recently. Mm. And we were talking about, do I just?
Yeah, we can talk about
okay,
it.
Okay, I don't know what how much to touch.
It affected all of our lives. So can I?
Go. I'll tell the story later.
If we're laying all the cards on the table, we recently, one of our close friends passed away. Mm. Very, very close friends. We have this really beautiful friend group that is here in LA. We've known each other for at least 7 years. I've known for seven years, but people have in this friend group have known each other for many, many years. Mm-hmm. And in the past 2 weeks have been really hard for us as a friend group, as a community in Los Angeles, because this person passed away unexpectedly.
Like 1 minute to the next.
Yeah. At a very young age. And I think the three of us, it's been very hard, right? Mm-hmm. Emotionally, mentally, physically. And literally we have to, I mean, I relied so much on chapter 2 of this beautiful book because Krishna talks about the body and the soul. And literally that has helped us as a community understand this death and like the tragedy that it was and like how life is so uncertain. And the only thing that's true and non-temporary is Krishna and our love for Krishna. And because we can go at any second. And so that's just something that the three of us are going through. So you can go ahead.
So in this, the last couple of weeks, we've had a lot of conversations and a lot of introspection and just kind of death has been really present for all of us. And we're also all connected to this philosophy. So we've all at least had that to hold on to, right? Anyways, I don't even know how much to say on this, but
I think take your time. This is an important topic. Say whatever you want to say.
And it's very real too, because like death is like, Krishna talks about it at the very beginning of this book, because it is a very prominent part of our reality.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to like rely on the philosophy, but also like talk about real feelings, because people are going to go through this.
Right.
Yeah. We went through this and
totally. Yeah. It's not like the philosophy is here and real life is here. It's okay. How do we bridge the gap mm-hmm. and apply this philosophy? And this was such a setting for all of us to like really apply it, because it was so shocking. Like Shama said, 1 minute to the next, it's not like whatever, he had cancer that you know for months and it's a yeah. buildup and you say your goodbyes. Yeah. When we all got the message in our group, it was almost like, wait, this can't be yeah. real. Is this a bad joke? What is this? Yeah. It was yeah. so unreal.
Yeah. Our friend had a heart attack and he was only 37 years old. And so yeah. it was just a lot. And yeah. And yeah.
Yeah. One of the many thoughts I had over the last 2 weeks was, I remember an episode in which I asked, and I'm going to start tearing up. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'll try not to. I asked you, you know, like, how did you make that choice to like go full force towards Krishna? And you mm-hmm. told me that it was the car accident that you guys had where you really mm-hmm. thought, oh my gosh, I might die. And mm-hmm. It really was kind of like a wake up call for you. And I thought, I remember saying, I think maybe on air saying
you
like,
did say.
Like I don't have that experience and it's hard for me to relate to that. And I like, it's, I don't want it. Like, I know I'm not asking for an accident for my like close to death experience mm-hmm. To be able to understand. I wish I just could like have more of that.
Like a wake up call.
Yeah. Like that
urgency.
Urgency. Thank mm-hmm. you. That's the word. And I think over the last 2 weeks, I thought about that and I thought, my friend is gone, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this is no joke. We can all die at any second, you know, because you all survived. You had difficulties in your car accident and it was no joke, but mm-hmm. still like our yeah. friend is not here. And
yeah,
that like made it really real for me in terms of, oh my God, like it was like,
you can take your time. It's okay.
I just don't know. No, you know, like okay. I didn't expect to actually talk about this right now, but
what did it make you feel?
I just thought, oh Krishna, like what have I been doing? Mm. And like, what are we all doing? And how can I help everyone? And like, how, like, what am I meant to do? What are the steps? Like, how can I, like, I felt this sense of urgency of yeah. like, oh my God, it can happen at any time. How mm-hmm. do we so easily forget? Mm-hmm. You know, it's like we're aware that people die and yet we think it's never going to be us.
Yeah.
That's the thing that King Yudhisthira, that we're reading about, that he's Arjuna's brother. He says that's the most amazing thing, that death is going to happen to all of us, but we never feel it's going to really happen to us personally. Mm-hmm. Even though yeah. you know it, it's a difference to know it, to yeah. feel it.
Yeah.
Do you think that's Maya a little bit, where Maya plagues our mind oh, and yeah. is like, oh, you have see more death time. All around it. Oh, you have time though. Yeah. You'll
you
be fine.
You have time. You have so many more things you want to accomplish. 100%. And do. Yeah. So many things you want to achieve. It's like, it's
and
like
she
a
makes us
holding
forget.
The silver platter of like, do you want this? Do you want that? No. That'll happen way down
yeah,
the road.
Don't worry about that 80, now. 90, 100 before you die. But don't you want to indulge? Like, I feel like Maya makes us forget.
Totally.
And I think these things that happen in our life, these wake up calls, we mm-hmm. really need to take them seriously, because yeah. Maya will make us forget and then we'll just get back into this mm-hmm. thing. But I think we should talk about these things, and like mm-hmm. death is such a real thing and we need to prepare for that every single day.
Yeah. yeah. And I think it's so wild, because within the last 2 weeks, you know, we've been doing kirtans every evening, and you know, we've done all the rituals and all the things. And I realized that I had the realization, and then I realized how easily I got caught up and forgot. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like even within the last 2 weeks,
yeah.
I'm like, okay, I need to do this. I need to do that. How can I help here? And like my brain is just going 1,000 miles per hour, and it's like not really considering like, wait, mm-hmm. like, yeah. you know, like don't forget this. And it's so mm-hmm. easy to forget. I'm already feeling that sense of like, gosh, yeah. I don't want to forget. But anyways, yeah. not to bring it a little lighter.
No, it's making no, me it's making real. Me tear up thinking about that, because life is so short mm, and we yeah. don't think of how deep that is. Like, yeah, life's short, I get it. But even last night, I just went on a little walk outside with my mom, and I remember just really looking at her and thinking, who knows how long we'll have these together, these little mm. walks to share. Mm. And I was so in the moment, and I made sure to so enjoy it, because it makes you like really appreciate the moments. And it's so true, Priya, even if you can have the realization 1 minute, within the next 5 minutes, you can forget. You get totally caught up.
Wild.
You'll go on your phone, a million things thrown in your direction, and you'll forget just like that. But hearing you really was moving me again, remembering about different moments in these 2 weeks that I was with my family, with my friends and loved ones, that I was like, we don't know how much longer we'll get with this. So why don't you just give it your all and be fully present and put all your heart into this?
And it is kind of scary, right? I mean, like, we did 12 nights of kirtan for our friend, right? Yeah. And then I think we were all so like emotionally overwhelmed that like yesterday I couldn't be around anybody. Like I had to not do something that reminds me of death because it was so hard. And if you live, like, it can be fearful if like you're just in a place of like, oh my God, I'm going to die. And that's why I think like for a coping mechanism, we try to do other things, right?
Right.
But I think instead of turning, like taking that fear and like turning it into love, like how can we love more? How can we hold on to our like friends and family more? But how can I love Krishna even more? Like that is the one thing that is not temporary, right?
And you always say we can choose fear or love.
Mm-hmm.
You said that.
Yeah. Also, I don't know which of you said it. I think it was Shama that said like, there's nothing to fear if you think that death is just Krishna greeting us at the end.
That was
Shamali. Oh, Shamali. Yeah. And
my spiritual master said that.
Nice. And I think that's a really lovely sentiment. And I think for me, it was, my realization wasn't, oh, I can die at any minute. I'm afraid of death. My realization was, I could die at any minute. Am I doing everything that I wish I was doing in my spiritual life, in other aspects of my life, where I would, you know, like close the chapter well? Like that was sort of my mindset was like, okay, like is my sadhana okay? What can I be? How can I be better in the time that I have left so that, you know, I did what the best I could, basically. It's like I have this sort of mindset of I need to do the best that I can. And
you know, I think maybe that is like Krishna's mercy. I know it was such a hard experience for all three of us and our entire friend community here in Los Angeles, but the mercy in it is like you were desiring that wake up call, that urgency, right? And it's real, and it looks you in the face and says, "Okay, how bad do you want this now?" You know, it's real. It's like, how do we take our devotional life more seriously? Because death can happen at any moment.
Can I ask you, Priya, what if there's some example of something that? Okay, having this mindset, am I doing all that I can to prepare for the chapter closing? I love how it's true. It's like the curtain closes, the chapter closes. Is there an example of something that you felt like in this way or in that way I can?
I mean, so many, but I think I'm also a perfectionist. So if you ask me, I'll give you a whole list of things that I feel like I could be doing better, you know? And I think, and it's just like small stuff, you know, like I don't even know. I like what I said was real. I had the realization. We got very preoccupied the last 2 weeks. And
we were planning a lot of events and stuff.
We were really trying to be there. And so now it's like, okay, like how do I get back into my life and how can I make my life better for that, you know, that chapter? And so it's like small things like how can I serve my deities better? Or am I doing enough service? Am I, you know, like my chanting needs to be better? Or like, can I want to read more. Like I have all these desires that I have had for some time, but now it's like, no, I got to do it now. I can't just wait. Right. Like, and you know, I think I've talked about this before. I'm the kind of person who loves company. So I'm like, how can I engage people to read with me? How can I, like, I'm thinking about these kinds of things.
You did it with this podcast. So it's good. Just make people do it.
Just make people. I mean, people have to want to do it too. So I think it's just like trying to figure out ways to engage myself more in Krishna conscious ways and like try to read more before I go to bed. Like just, I don't know, so many things, you know?
It's so true. We can have these desires for a long time, but they'll just kind of stay floating there and the years start passing. Like, I don't know what episode it was, how many ago that I talked about, I want to read more. It's difficult to apply. Yeah. It's difficult.
Any realizations, Shamali, from this past 2 weeks?
Before you do that, you think about that for a second. I was going to say, I actually found, I don't think I told you guys this because I told somebody else. I saw on Facebook, someone posted a question along the lines of looking for ways to engage people in like just Krishna consciousness in different aspects. What have you done that has worked for you? And a bunch of people responded. And one message I really loved was, because it felt like something we could also do. But anyways, she said, my friends and I, a group of women, have a group chat, WhatsApp chat or whatever, and we're reading the Srimad Bhagavatam together. And we just have to do like 10 pages every day. Everyone just sends in a check mark when they've done it, and we keep each other accountable to do so. And she said, we're not always perfect, but right now we're on canto seven. And she's like, I've never gone past canto one my own. And so even though we're not perfect, like I'm still further than I was if I hadn't done that. And it was like, that kind of like was like, oh man, it is true. Like just keeping each other accountable. That's another aspect that I really like from our friend's death that I really care about. Like, are we keeping each other healthy? Are we keeping each other connected, spiritually connected? And like all these aspects, how can I do more of that for all of us?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
I love that. Yeah. And the urgency to do it now. Don't wait. Yeah. Like start that group. If you need people to help you, like put out feelers, like ask people. Well, worst they could say is no, right?
Right.
Yeah. You know, one thing I just want to emphasize, because Priya, when you said, am I doing my best in all these ways that'll help me before the chapter closes, it just brought to mind one little moment that I had a few days before our friend passed away, which was weird timing because I was already maybe in this mindset then. I, in my home, you know, I live with, currently live with my mom, my sister, and like a lifelong best friend of mine. So with my lifelong best friend, we almost had this whole mini goodbye because, you know, as life unfolds, we get older, we start seeing the next chapter approaching. So we were both thinking, oh man, we may not always live together, you know? Pretty much around the corner, we can see like, you'll go off and get married, I'll go off and get married, we'll have our families. It was this mutual feeling where we looked into each other's eyes and we felt the next chapter encroaching. And we had this whole, I don't know how to even describe or summarize the feeling, but we felt the temporal nature of how fast and fleeting life is. And she said, this almost feels like our second goodbye to childhood, because the first one was when I moved away from Texas. We were teenagers saying goodbye, hugging, it started raining, it was all dramatic. We move here, and this second goodbye to what a beautiful little setting we've created. And she said something that was similar to you. She said, I feel like, have I done my best in these years living with you? And I was like, oh, don't even, yeah, it's been beautiful. But like, you have this thought of, have I given it my best here? Yeah. And we don't often think of what you said, the urgency that this is not forever. No chapter is forever. And sometimes you can think, ah, my parents will be around forever. How annoying they are. Ah, I mean, I never think my parents are annoying. I have I have an excessive love for them that like, it's but a lot.
Compares to no one. But normal. Yeah. I'm just kidding.
Truly.
No,
most normal people have those thoughts.
So I was throwing examples of whatever family or friends surround you, we tend to think this will last forever. But especially with a few days after that moment with my lifelong friend, and we both actually, it was late at night, and we both barged into my mom's room and we were like, mama, and we started hugging her. She's like, girls, I'm trying to sleep. What's going on? We had tears in our eyes. Aww. It was a deep moment. Anyway, so look at the people around you. And I think no moment lasts forever. So the feeling of all of this realization with our friend leaving, and Priya, you said it so beautifully, how can I do my best in my spiritual life? How can I show up my best for my friends, for my family? Life is short, and the moments you have together will not last forever.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Well,
anything else on the purport?
We just got to wrap it into in terms of like bringing it back, right? So we talked about our bodies being a field of activity, where we can execute our desires and use our senses. We talked about, I mean, I'm just going to bring this up. Sometimes we think like, I'm happy, I'm a man, I'm a woman, I'm a dog, I'm a cat. And these are designations of our soul, but they're not really
our true identity.
Yeah. We've seen our body go through so many changes even in this life. So that's why we know there's a difference between us, the knower of the field of activities, and then the body, the actual field of activities.
Yeah. And then I think the last point I want to make here, and we'll read the text one more time after that, is we go through this whole experience of life, right? And we were talking about how maybe some people get to meet Krishna or not. And Prabhupada says here, when we are enlightened by pious activities, we approach the Supreme Lord in different capacities. Mm. When we're distressed, when we want money, when we're inquisitive, and when we are in search of knowledge. So regardless of what field of activity and our soul and everything else and all of that happens in between, we at the end of the day, we find a way to find Krishna through those four means.
So we only search for God when we're sad or we want money, when we're curious or when we want to figure out the truth.
Yep.
Wow. Interesting.
So fascinating.
It's true, though.
But so, some people...
I've been looking for a God in the last 2 weeks because it's been sad, you know? And or distressed. That's the better word for it. Yeah.
Yeah. So let me read the text one more time. Yeah. Yep. Okay. Arjuna said, "Oh, my dear Krishna, I wish to know about Prakriti, nature, which we said was..." Oh, it comes in.
We didn't
because it's actually in the next text. Mm-hmm. Purusha, the enjoyer, and the field and the knower of the field, and of knowledge and the object of knowledge. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "This body of Sanakunti is called the field, and one who knows this body is called the knower of the field." So it's a little complex, but we'll keep diving into it. Yes?
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. And please bear with us. We're just going through something with our friend's death. So we will be talking about realizations in upcoming chapters, because I think it's important in upcoming episodes. Yeah. So thank you so much for listening, everybody. Please join us for next episode.
Bye.
Bye. Hello, beautiful souls. If you like what you're hearing, please follow us on Instagram at Modern Yogi Podcast.
And if you love what you're hearing, please make sure to share a link to our podcast at Modern Yogi Podcast with all your friends, families, and long-lost cousins.
And if you have any questions at all, send us a DM on Instagram at Modern Yogi Podcast, and we'll be sure to get back to you.
Thank you for listening to
The Modern Yogi.